F.O. Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 8th of September, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to conclude my study of Jack Webb by playing two of his final radio dramas, well, that he had interactions with. We'll start things off with Dragnet, The Big Cliff. It said an original air date of the 28th of June, 1951. And I'm going to follow that by another show that he did in 1951 for his the summer hiatus of Dragnet. Thanks for listening.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. An elderly man reports the sudden death of his wife. He claims he awoke in the morning to find her dead on the floor of their bedroom. The cause of death is not apparent. Your job? Investigate.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Friday, November 12th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. It was 9:38 a.m. when I got back to the first floor of the Blackwell Hotel. Room 7.
Oh, hi, Joe. Come on.
Yeah. How's the old fella doing? Did he tell you anything?
Hasn't talked at all. He's pretty broken up. Woman's dead, that's about it. Well, how about the bruise on her forehead? You think that could have been it?
No, it was just a slight bruise. I don't think that could have killed her.
They moved the body out of the room yet?
Yeah, they just did, taking it downtown for the autopsy. Well, I guess we can take the old man back to his own room now, huh?
Yeah, I think so. He's back here in the kitchen now.
Mm-hmm.
Fixed him a cup of coffee. Still feeling pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Turner, would you like to go back to your room now? Everything's been fixed up. Mr. Turner?
What happened? You can tell me. What happened to Gertrude?
I'm afraid we don't know, Mr. Turner, not yet.
I told you about it, didn't I? Woke up this morning about 8 o'clock, put my arm over on the pillow, and she wasn't there. Then I got up and I saw her laying on the floor. My wife, Gertrude. I felt her arm. She was cold. Ice cold. Somebody ought to know what happened.
Well, we'll let you know just as soon as we get the coroner's report, sir. Would you like to go back to your own room now?
What's the coroner have to do with it?
Well, he's going to have to perform an autopsy. We'll have the report for you tomorrow morning.
I don't want him to do that to Gertrude. I don't want him to.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm afraid it's necessary. Deaths of this kind, there was no doctor in attendance. Nobody to sign the death certificate.
There's nothing I can do. Nothing to help her.
I'm sorry, Mr. Turner.
Can we help you back to your room, sir?
Is she still there?
No, sir. They've taken her body downtown. Can I give you a hand there?
Thank you. All right.
I'll get the door.
Where'd Mr. Parkson go?
Who's that, sir?
The hotel manager, Mr. Parkson.
Oh, yeah.
These are his rooms here. I wanted to tell him thank you for letting me stay down here a while.
Well, I think he'll be back in a few minutes. He was busy outside.
Nice of him. Let me use his place. I couldn't stay in our room. Not the way it was. Gertrude lying there.
It's all right now, Mr. Turner. Can you make the stairs all right?
Yes, sir, thank you. I'm just a little tired, that's all. I guess the whole thing's been too much for me.
Maybe you'd like to have us call your family doctor.
No, we don't have a family doctor. I'll be all right after a spell. It's just hard to understand, that's all. I have to think about it a while. Sit down and think about it.
Yes, sir. Here we are. I'll get the door. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah.
Right there on the floor, officer. It's where I found her when I woke up. Right there by the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Where have they taken her?
Downtown, Mr. Turner, to the county morgue.
Oh. They'll let me see her, won't they?
Yes, sir, they will. Do you feel up to answering a few questions for us now?
All right. I'll tell you everything I know about it. I don't see how it's going to help anything.
We'll try to make it as brief as possible, sir. Now, your wife's full name is Gertrude Agnes Turner, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Her age?
Let's see, Gertrude 63. Yeah, that's it. I'm 4 years older than her. That's how I always tell.
Was your wife in good health, Mr. Turner? Under a doctor's care, anything like that?
No. Nothing wrong with her I knew of.
Heart trouble? Anything like that?
No, sir. She used to have headaches every now and then. A doctor friend of ours back home used to send pills for her to take. That's about all.
How was your wife feeling last night? Was she all right then?
Just fine. When I woke up, I put my arm over on her pillow. She wasn't there. Then I got up and saw her laying on the floor, right by the bed. Gertrude. She was ice cold. There was a little bruise up here on her forehead. I thought I was dreaming. She was dead. We weren't even married a year.
You want to go on, sir? You think you feel all right?
Yeah, it's all right, officer. I got a little bit of brandy in that cupboard over there. Think I could use some if you two officers don't mind?
That's perfectly all right, sir.
Yeah, I'll get it, Mr. Turner.
We had it all figured out. Tuesday, November 16th. That's her name's day.
How's that, sir?
November 16th. It's my wife's name's day. You see, Gertrude's a German girl. A lot of German people don't celebrate their birthday. They celebrate their name's day instead. Next Tuesday's St. Gertrude's day.
Oh, I see.
There you are, Mr. Turner.
Thank you. Either one of you officers care for some brandy, you're certainly welcome to it.
No, thank you very much.
Do you or your wife have many friends in town, Mr. Turner?
No, just a few. Around the hotel here. Gertrude and I have only been in California a few months. Come out from Indiana, you know, Fort Wayne.
Yes, sir. No relatives here?
No, sir. Wife only had one relative living, sister. She's back in Indiana.
How did you and your wife get along, all right?
Oh, fine. We never had any trouble. I loved her, officer.
Did your wife have any enemies that you know of, sir? People she didn't get along with? Somebody who might have wanted to hurt her?
Well, I can't think of anyone.
Well, how about some of the men your wife knew before she married you, Mr. Turner? Any bad feelings one of them might have had towards your wife?
No, sir, not that I know of. Besides, all her old friends are still back there in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. You say your marriage was working out pretty well. Your wife didn't have any gentleman friends that she might have been interested in?
No, sir, I know that for the truth. Gertrude spent her time at home. She didn't run around. She was a good wife.
Mm-hmm. Would you know if your wife had any reason at all to take her own life, maybe?
Well, that's the last thing in the world Gertrude to do. No reason for it. We had too many things to look forward to. Oh, lots of things. You don't stop living just because you pass 65.
Yes, sir.
Tell me the truth, officer. Don't you really know what happened to her?
No, sir, no more than you do. Afraid we'll have to wait for that coroner's report.
I don't understand it, officer. How am I supposed to understand it?
Sir?
I went to bed last night and I had a wife.
Yes, sir.
Today's my day off. We're going to take a car ride down the beach. That's the dress she was going to wear hanging up there. Gertrude made it herself. She was going to wear it today.
I'll try to take it easy, Mr. Turner.
I beg your pardon. She's all I had. Why should she have to die? She didn't have to die, did she?
I don't know, sir. Maybe she didn't have a choice. The body of the dead woman, Mrs. Gertrude Agnes Turner, was removed to the county morgue for autopsy. Ben and I filled out the 311 form, the dead body report, and filed it, pending the outcome of the autopsy. A couple of Mr. Turner's friends, who lived upstairs from him at the Blackwell Hotel, agreed to look after the old man until he got over the shock of his wife's sudden death. 7:45 the next morning, I checked in for work as usual.
Morning, Joe.
Morning. What do you know?
Not much. Pretty slow.
How about the Turner woman? No word in the autopsy, huh?
No, coroner hasn't called yet. If you've got any smokes, I left the house in a hurry this morning and forgot everything.
Yeah, right here.
Oh, thanks.
Here you are.
Thanks. Lousy morning. Another row with the wife.
Oh? Mm-hmm. What's the matter?
Oh, another one of those church bazaars she got herself mixed up in. She's calling on me for help again.
Oh, yeah? What she wants you to do now?
Remember the last time, don't you? That spring bazaar. Had me working on decorations down the church 7 nights a week. 18 women running around telling you what to do.
Yeah.
It's like a madhouse, Joe. This time, it's even worse.
How do you mean?
This time, the ladies figure they ought to have a little more production. They want me to dress up in some kind of funny costume. Auction off pies and cake. You know, stovepipe hat, false mustache will work.
No? You turned them down, huh? You won't do it, will you?
Well, not exactly. Wife kicked up such a row, I guess I'll end up doing it. Got an idea, though. Wouldn't be so bad if I had somebody to work with me. You wouldn't like to help me out, would you, Joe?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to be a little busy, Ben, but if I get a chance, I'll drop out to see you, though. I get it.
Yeah.
Homicide, Friday. Oh, yeah. How's that? Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Okay, we'll be right over. Was Doc Cephalou over at the morgue about Ms. Turner?
Got the autopsy report for us?
Yeah, they won't sign the death certificate.
What's the trouble?
A couple of things. Looks too suspicious for them, they said.
How'd they list the cause of death?
She suffocated. 8:15 a.m. We went across the street and talked with Dr. Cephalou. All he could tell us was that Gertrude Turner had suffered severe convulsions and that she had died of suffocation. There was a small bruise in her forehead and numerous other small bruises around the base of the throat. Not enough to say that the woman had been murdered, and yet too much to dismiss the case as an accidental death. Together with Lorman and Barrett from Homicide, Ben and I looked up some of the friends of Mr. and Mrs. Turner. We found two points which didn't check out with the story that Mr. Turner had told us. According to the friends, Turner had had some violent arguments with his wife. On at least one occasion, he'd struck her. And secondly, the dead woman did have a gentleman friend in the neighborhood, but his conduct with her had been above question. It was strictly friendship. We decided to take it from there. We went back to the Blackwell Hotel and found Mr. Turner in his room. He was wrapping up some of his wife's personal effects and packing them in corrugated boxes. We told him about the coroner's report.
I don't think I believe that, Sergeant. People just don't suffocate. There's got to be a reason for it.
Yes, sir. That's what we're looking for.
Well, don't they know? Can't they tell you how it happened to the doctors?
Well, she had severe convulsions. She suffocated. That's just all they could tell us.
Well, the bruise on her head, Gertrude's forehead. What'd they say about that?
Well, that wasn't the cause of death, Mr. Turner. She could have gotten a bump when she fell out of bed. It might have been that. It might not.
I just don't understand. You'd think there'd be some way of telling.
Well, we were around talking to some of your friends in the neighborhood this morning. Friends of you and your wife.
Yeah. Oh, they've been real friends, officers. Every one of them. Been up to see me. Brought me meals and things. Say, isn't that a pretty thing? Just look at that.
Yes, sir.
Real bone china. A cup and a saucer. Gertrude used to collect them. Had all kinds. Pretty.
Yes, sir. When we were talking to you yesterday, sir, you told us that you and your wife got along pretty well. No arguments?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Well, now, some of your friends tell us that you used to argue with your wife quite a bit.
Who told you that?
Some of your friends here in the neighborhood. Is that true?
When we first got married, Gertrude and I guess we had a few spats. No different than other people. Getting used to each other, things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever strike your wife, Mr. Turner?
Why do you ask that?
Routine question. Did you ever strike your wife? Mr. Turner?
Yes. One of the first arguments we had. I don't even remember what it was about. That's how important it was.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my temper, I guess. I kind of slapped her. Oh, I felt like a no-good bum. Never once happened again. Slapping Gertrude. It's hard to remember it right now.
Well, we asked you the same question yesterday, sir. Couldn't you have told us that then?
Oh, I'm sorry, officer. I guess I missed it. I wasn't feeling too good. I think you know what I mean.
But you remember us asking if your wife had any gentleman friends?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, now, is it true?
Well, there's one fella named Clyde Warren. Runs a drugstore down the street. I guess Gertrude knew him better than anybody, but he was my friend, too.
Well, did you ever complain to this Clyde Warren that he was spending too much time around your wife, that he ought to see less of her?
I think I did maybe once or twice. It was kind of in a fooling way. Certainly didn't mean it. Clyde Warren's one of my best friends.
Well, did you ever complain to your wife that she was seeing too much Warren?
No, sir. Never even mentioned it. Why you ask me all these things?
Well, your wife's dead, Mr. Turner, and we still haven't found out why.
But you asked me questions like I had something to do with it.
Well, you were the last one to see her alive, sir. You were alone with her in this room the night she died.
You think I killed Gertrude? Is that it? You think I killed my own wife?
No, sir, we didn't say anyone killed her.
You think I killed my own wife? You think I killed her?
Well, did you kill her, Mr. Turner?
You know I didn't kill Gertrude. You know I didn't do that.
I'm sorry, sir. There's not much else we can do now.
What do you mean?
Coroner found a series of bruises on the body, right around here, base of the neck. We know she died of suffocation. The two things seem to fit pretty well.
I don't know what you mean. I didn't see any bruises, not on her neck. I don't know what you mean.
We'll have to take you downtown, sir. You can call your lawyer now, if you like.
I don't have a lawyer. Why are you taking me downtown?
No alternative. We're going to have to book you.
How's that?
Suspicion of murder. 10:25 a.m. Before we booked him at the main jail, Mr. Turner asked us if we'd get off a telegram to his sister-in-law, Mrs. Helen Raymond, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, informing her of what had happened. We told him we would, and we did. We booked him in on suspicion of 187 PC, and then we checked back in at the office. We put in a call to the insurance company that held a policy on Mrs. Turner.
Yes, sir, Gertrude Agnes Turner. Mm-hmm. What was that? All right. Right, thank you, sir. Goodbye.
What'd they have to say?
Mrs. Turner had three different policies on her life, total of $5,000. Mr. Turner's a beneficiary on all three.
Well, that'll do for a motive.
And something else here.
Yeah.
Newest policy is for $1,000, industrial policy.
When was it taken out?
3 weeks ago.
Monday, November 15th, 10 a.m. The investigation went on. We failed to uncover any additional evidence against the suspect, Mr. Turner. We had three main points against the man: the recently issued insurance policy on his wife for $1,000, the fact that he had fought with his wife and struck her on several occasions, and the series of bruises which had been discovered at the base of the dead woman's neck. Well, as it stood, we weren't too sure that the case would hold up in court. Ben was less sure that the old man was actually responsible for the death of his wife. We figured if Turner was guilty, we might try to impress him with the evidence against him and attempt to get a confession. Monday, 1 p.m., we went over to the main jail to interrogate the suspect. You want to step aside there? They want to lock that door.
Oh, yes,
sir. This way, Mr. Turner. I'll get the light switch.
Right here, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Turner, you'd like to sit down?
All right. Thank you. Why'd you come to see me? Have you found out something?
We've been checking a little bit further into the case, Mr. Turner. We got a few more questions for you, if you don't mind.
Did you send the message to my sister-in-law, Mrs. Raymond, the one I asked you to send?
Yes, sir. We took care of it.
You got the address right, didn't you? Fort Wayne, Indiana?
That's right. Just sent a telegram, told her all about it.
That was 2 days ago. She should have gotten it by now. I haven't heard a word from her. Are you sure she got the telegram all right?
Pretty sure. We'll check on it when we get back to the office.
A few things we got here that you might like to know about, sir. Maybe you can help clear them up for us.
What's that, officer?
We understand that your wife, Gertrude, had some insurance on herself. $5,000 worth?
Yes, that's right. Something you want to know about it?
Well, she named you as the beneficiary in each of her policies. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Gertrude was a great believer in insurance. Don't hold with it too much myself. She used to tell me all the time.
Yes, sir?
In case she died first, she wanted me to have a little something for old age. Something to retire on and get a little ranch out in the valley.
I understand she took out a policy just lately, $1,000 about 3 weeks ago.
I know about it. I didn't want her to do it. Clean waste of money, I told her. Payments are pretty steep.
Well, sir, is there anybody who can back that up? That you told your wife you didn't want her to take out that policy?
No, I don't think so. We didn't talk about our business with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Friday, it'll know.
Yeah, what is it?
Phone call, says it's important to either one of you.
You want to get it, Ben?
You okay?
You can take it out the desk here.
All right, thanks.
I think I know what you mean. The insurance. You think that's why I killed Gertrude. Isn't that right?
Well, sir, put yourself in our place, Mr. Turner. What would you think?
You know in your heart I didn't kill my wife. You know that in your heart.
Well, they don't pay us for what we believe, Turner. They pay us to get the facts, to run down evidence. Doesn't make any difference what I believe.
But you know I didn't kill her. You know that, don't you?
Well, sir, I know we asked you if you ever argued with your wife, and you told us no. We found out you beat her up a couple of times. We asked you if she was friendly with any of the men in the neighborhood. You told us no. We found one. We asked you about the bruises the coroner found on her neck. You don't know. You can't explain them. We asked you if your wife had been ill, if she had any sickness to explain her dying the way she did, and you said no. We asked you about the insurance. You can't explain that either. 3 weeks before she dies, she takes out $1,000 on her life. She dies in the same room with you, and you don't know how or why. Now, you tell me, mister, what are we supposed to believe?
I didn't kill her. Somebody has to believe it. Somebody. I didn't kill her.
Joe, see you in a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
That phone call, it was long distance. Turner's sister-in-law, Mrs. Raymond.
What'd she want?
Calling from Fort Wayne. She's flying out here tonight. Seemed pretty wrought up.
About her sister, huh?
Mostly about Mr. Turner. She claims he's innocent. Seems pretty sure of it.
Mm-hmm. She can prove that Turner didn't kill his wife?
That's what she said. She's bringing the proof with her.
Tuesday, November 16th. Turner's sister-in-law, Mrs. Raymond, was scheduled to arrive at 6 p.m. by plane from Indiana. At 2 p.m., one of the main points in the case against the suspect was proven false. A woman friend of Mrs. Turner, after reading of the husband's arrest in the paper, informed us that while Mrs. Turner was visiting her home a few days before she died, she complained of a severe headache. The woman's son, who was studying to be a chiropractor, attempted to treat Mrs. Turner's headache by manipulating the muscles in her neck and shoulders. The woman said that Mrs. Turner called the next day and complained about receiving bruises on her neck as a result of her son's experimental treatment. The son came down to the office and signed a full statement to this effect. At 7 p.m., Mr. Turner's sister-in-law arrived. With her was a Dr. John Grant, a Fort Wayne physician. The two of them told us their story and gave us all the information they had concerning the case. Ben and I went immediately to the main jail, picked up Mr. Turner, and brought him back to the office. His sister-in-law and Dr. Grant waited in the adjoining room.
Why'd you bring me here? You gonna ask me more questions? I told you everything.
No, sir. No more questions.
You can't take me off to prison. I haven't had a trial yet.
No, sir. You're not gonna have a trial, Mr. Turner. We're releasing you.
How's that?
Your sister-in-law, Ms. Raymond, she's in the next room with her doctor. They're gonna take you home, sir.
I don't think I understand, officer. How do you mean?
Your sister-in-law just got in from Fort Wayne tonight, and she has her family doctor with her. They told us about your wife, Gertrude. Everything we had to know.
About Gertrude? My wife? Well, what do you mean, officer?
Well, maybe you can understand, sir. Your wife was afraid to let you know. She told her sister she was afraid it might break up her marriage.
Afraid to tell me what?
Well, your wife suffered from epilepsy. She had it most of her life.
She had epilepsy?
Yes, sir, she did. And this Dr. Grant showed us that he's been sending your wife medicine ever since you moved out here to California.
We treated her many times for the same thing before you met her. She figured it might ruin her chances of marrying you, so she kept it a secret.
The medicine. I remember that. Used to come through the mail.
And that's it, sir. Accounts for the headache she had the night before she died. She probably had an attack during the night, suffocated. That's how you found her in the morning.
Why didn't they know? The coroner, they examined her.
Well, sir, that's just the point. If you die of epilepsy, there's just no way of telling, not even by autopsy. Convulsions and suffocation. That's the only way they can list it.
And she was ashamed, Gertrude. She was afraid to tell me.
Yes, sir, that's what she wrote to your sister-in-law. We saw the letters.
And I can leave now if I want to? Is it all right?
We'll get you things from the property clerk first, and then you can go.
Can I see Helen now, my sister-in-law? I'd like to say hello.
Yes, sir, you can. It's right through that door.
Well, thank you kindly.
It's all right.
Officer.
Yes, sir.
Just one thing I'd like to ask.
Yes, sir.
You knew all the time, didn't you? I mean in your own heart.
How's that?
I couldn't have killed Gertrude. In your own heart, you knew that, didn't you? Officer?
Yes, sir. I know it.
Oh, I thought you did. I'll be right back.
Joe? I wouldn't worry about him.
What's that?
We'll call it a white lie.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On November 16th, a meeting was held in the office of Blaine Steed, captain of homicide. In a moment, the results of that meeting.
And now here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, the makers of Fatima do everything possible to produce the king-size cigarette that you want, just as we on Dragnet try to bring you the kind of entertainment that you want. Well, in our honest opinion, Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes. And I know from reading our Dragnet mail that more and more of you back me up on that. If you haven't tried Fatimas yet, may I suggest you buy a pack? You'll find Fatima gives you all the advantages of extra length, plus Fatima quality, which no other king-size cigarette has. Remember, tomorrow, first chance you get, buy Fatima.
The death of Gertrude Agnes Turner was proved beyond a doubt to be due to natural causes. A 9.10 report was made which completely exonerated the husband of the dead woman. Just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads, and thank you, Ad Council. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. The top of the hour, we heard The Big Cliff, an episode of Dragnet that aired on the 28th of June, 1951 on NBC. This next show also aired on NBC. It was Jack Webb's filler program for the summer when Dragnet went on hiatus. He teamed up again with Richard Breen, that wrote most of his early radio dramas, and for the Pete Kelly Show, which some folks didn't like, I guess, last week. But this one's Pete Kelly's Blues. This episode is titled Zelda, with an original air date of the 29th of August, 1951. Richard Breen and Jack Webb would make this into a motion picture in 1953. Not this specific episode, but Pete Kelly's Blues. Thanks for listening.
This one's about Pete Kelly. It's about the world he goes around in. It's about the big music and the big trouble in the big 20s. So when they ask you, tell them this one's about the blues. Pete Kelly's Blues. Starring Jack Webb, with story by Joe Eisinger and music by Dick Cathcart.
...417 Cherry Street, Kansas City. It's a standard speakeasy. The ceiling is low, the prices are high, and the whiskey is cut more times than a chin at a barber college. The entrance is just wide enough to handle one at a time, vertical or horizontal. My name's Pete Kelly. I play cornet. We start every night about 10, and we play till the last buck is home safe in Lupo's cash register. George Lupo owns the lease. He's a fat, friendly little guy you can always count on for a 20 in exchange for two 10s. But that's all right. He lets us play the kind of music we like, and every once in a while he'll let us duck out to make a couple of phonograph records. All he asks is that we're back in an hour and 15% of the take. Well, last night, Matty Wynn had been after us for 2 weeks to make another record for him to fill out one side. Matty ran a two-turntable recording joint in a loft over on Baltimore. During the day, he'd keep busy making two-buck personal records for the folks to send back home to the farm. At night, he'd rope a combo like ours to put out with some Dixie for the local market. We'd already pressed a few for his label under different names. The Spickardsville Sparks, the Grundy Growlers, the KC Cats. Maybe you got one or two in your collection. Hold on to them. They're pure. Well, it was getting on to 11 when I pushed the tempo on the last number in the second set. Lupo glared at us as we hustled out. We packed up our instruments, we piled into a taxi in Red's Erskine Coupe and slammed out for Baltimore Street and Matty's loft.
Come on, I'll help you with the bait.
All right. Let's keep it light, huh? This is a residential district now. Hold it down, boys, huh? Hold it down.
Hey, fellas, quiet down now. Quiet!
Pete?
Who's that, Red?
Looks like Zelda.
Oh, Pete, I'm so glad I didn't miss you.
Yeah, Zelda.
I have to... Could I talk to you for a minute, Pete?
All right, what's on your mind?
Alone?
I got a recording date, Zelda.
I know, Pete. That's why I came here.
We have to get back to 417.
A minute, Pete? A half a minute.
All right.
Okay, Petey, we'll wait upstairs. All right, you guys, let's move. And Pete.
Yeah, Red.
We don't sound like much out of cornet. Make it snappy, huh?
All right.
All right, inside, Mo.
Okay. Thank you, Pete.
All right, come on, Zelda.
Don't be mean, Pete. I've had my share of meanness. The way the newspaper...
What did you expect? Rave notices for the way you divorced Matty to marry a hood like Johnny April?
I have a right to live my own life.
Sure, no matter whose life you kick the shreds doing it.
I love Johnny, and he loves me. Oh, Pete, of all people, I thought you would understand that you would...
Now, look, Zelda. I like a guy named Matty Wynn. In my book, he didn't rate the kind of treatment you dealt him.
You like a guy named Matty Wynn? How much do you really know
about... All right,
about...
Zelda, just funnel this down. Now, what do you want?
Matty refuses to see me, Pete.
That figures.
I want you to talk to him for me.
Saying what?
You and Matty, you always got on well together. He may listen to
now
you.
Now, look, Zelda, I got a job to do. Get to it.
Matty's got a record that belongs to me. I want it.
What kind of a record?
It's a record you and the boys made once, June 9th.
Well, you're beginning to make a lot of sense, Zelda.
He'll understand, Pete. Just tell him I'll give him anything he wants for the record. You just tell him that, Pete. If you talk to him, maybe he'll...
Now, look, Zelda, just for the book here. I never liked you much.
I know,
Pete. I think you were grief for Matty from the first day he met you until the day you dealt him the final foul. All right, now why don't you just leave him alone?
For Matty's sake, believe me, Pete, for his sake, I must have that record. And if you're a friend of his, Pete, you'll advise him to give it to me.
All right.
I don't know what you want with an old disc of mine, but if it's something you need, it's something Maddie's better off without. Maddie?
Well, Pete, I began to think you deserted us for the Mound City Blue Blower.
I just left Zelda.
Of course, the wisest thing any man could do.
She was waiting for me downstairs.
Why is it, Pete, that we always assume the Vulture to be male?
Well, she seemed more like a frightened rabbit.
Zelda, rabbit? Mink, yes, but never rabbit.
All right, Maddie, I'll tell you about it after the session, huh? All right, let's get it on the road, huh? Maddie, what do you want us to do?
Well, you've just got one side to fill. Last time you did me singing the blues, we never did get a good take on Dixieland One Step.
Okay, all right, come on, guys. Let's like each other, huh?
Quiet down, quiet down.
All right, let's do Dixieland One Step.
How you want routine, Petey?
Well, let's see, like this. Everybody going in. Nick, slug those brakes solid. Matlock, you take the first little break on clarinet.
Yeah.
And Mo, you take the second and really blow it out, huh? Give me a...
And everybody in on the first chorus, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And I'll take it for 16. Matlock, you take 16, everybody out. Good and bright, huh?
Yeah, okay. Pete.
All right. Ready, Matty?
Just a second. Okay, take it on the count, huh?
All right, now, here we go.
4, 3, 2, 1...
Good, huh?
Yeah, it was good for me.
Fine, Matlock.
Matty?
That does it, Pete.
All right, you can pack up. I'll see you back at 4:17, huh?
Come on, boys. You stand behind, Pete?
Yeah, 10 minutes. Leave the Erskine for me, will you, Red?
Sure. Look, Pete, you come here to take care of your business. Leave it that way, huh?
Don't worry, Red, I aim to. Will you take my horn?
Yeah.
I'll see you later.
All right.
Come on. Nice, Pete. One solo seemed a little long for time, but I think we can get it all on.
Look, Matty, I know this is probably none of my business.
The papers and her marriage to Johnny April has made Zelda everybody's business.
Well, she asked me to talk to you about a record.
Indeed.
An old one of ours, June Night.
Yeah, June Night. I remember it well, Pete. I always considered it a splendid achievement in jazz that should one day become a collector's item.
Zelda doesn't know jazz from German measles and cares less, but she said she'd give you anything you want for that record.
You can tell Zelda that she can purchase a copy of June Night at Lambert's for 35 cents.
Yeah, that's why I don't get it.
And if you're fortunate, Pete, you never will. Forgive me, Pete. I don't mean to be sharp with you, but you're young and carefree. Stay that way. And if Zelda should again approach you, take a trip around the world to someplace else, but go.
All right, Matty. She asked me to ask you, and I asked. Good night.
Good night, Pete.
Hey, you Pete Kelly?
Who wants to know?
Hear that, Perry? He wants to know who wants to know. All right, I'll tell you. I want to know. Feel better?
Sure, I'm Pete Kelly, but I got a right...
And I got a left. Let's ride.
Thanks, but I got my own car here.
Right now, ours is safer for you. It's bulletproof.
Well, I was going to tell him I didn't need a bulletproof car. He showed me the gun. It was a .45. I know how to admit it when I'm wrong. So we got into the bulletproof car. During the ride, I cased the two artillerymen. Except for their faces, I'd seen them a couple of times before. At 417, over at Sour Sammy's, at Fat Annie's. The same tightly tailored blue suits, the same long, itchy fingers, and the same razor-edged lips and eyes. Oh, there's hundreds of them around. But they're pretty right guys. You gotta know how to handle them. Just do as they tell you, and the chances are you won't lose more than one eye. Well, the car glided to a smooth stop in front of the Roxbury Apartments. The private elevator shot us up to the penthouse. My stomach caught up with me as the gunsels pushed me into a living room that was slightly smaller than Swope Park, but less crowded. One man, all shoulders, no hips, and rich black hair, a face that'd make Wally Reed cut his throat. He was sitting at a table with earphones on. He was tuning a radio. He glanced once over his shoulder at me. I didn't jump more than 20 yards. It was Johnny April.
Just a minute. I've been listening to something good on the earphones. Here, I'll plug in the speaker for you. Ah, you hear that music?
Yeah.
Nice reception, huh?
Yeah.
Just got it. 12-tube superheterodyne, Magnavox horn. Pulls in Frisco without static. The best. Drink?
No, thanks.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Canadian import, the best. You sure you want number one?
Yeah, sure.
Well, luck.
Luck.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Got a jolt, the best. You know who I am?
Yeah.
You sure?
Sure.
What's my name?
April. Johnny April.
That's right. You know my wife?
Your wife?
My wife.
Yeah?
You sure?
Yeah. Mrs. April.
Don't you know her better than that?
Than what?
Than Mrs. April.
Well?
Huh?
Well, sure. I know her. I knew her when she... Well, before she...
When she was married to Mary Wynn?
Yeah.
But you didn't call her Mrs. Wynn, did you?
Well, I... No.
What did you call her?
By her name?
Which is?
Zelda.
Zelda, that's right. That's all I wanted to fix. Now we both know what we're talking about, Zelda. You understand now?
Yeah.
That's why I invited you here, to talk about Zelda. And why you're bothering her.
Well, you lost me, Mr. April.
Not a bad suggestion, but first I want you to tell me what you and Wynn are clubbing Zelda with.
You're asking me to play without a cue sheet, Mr. April. I don't even know the tune.
Tonight you stopped Zelda on Baltimore Street. You talked to her on a corner. You were seen. She was pleading with you.
Now look, Mr. April, you're spinning it backwards. She stopped me, asked me to speak to Wynn.
About what?
Well, about a record she said belongs to her.
What record?
Well, it's a record. One that I made for Wynn. It's called... The title... Yeah, I know. This sounds silly, but it's true.
That's right, Kelly. It sounds silly because it isn't true. What do you want with Zelda?
All right, April. You take it any way you like. All I want from Zelda is distance between us. Now, I got a date to play.
Jake, teach him. What are you and Wynn cooking?
Nothing.
What do you want from Zelda?
Nothing, I tell you.
Johnny, what are you doing?
This the crumb who stopped you tonight?
Yeah, he's the one.
How much did Wynn pay you, April, to take Angel off his hands?
What did he want?
Money. Yeah, he said he and Wynn would make trouble for me, for you.
What kind of trouble?
My divorce, about my divorce. Open it up again unless I paid them.
All right. Now listen to me, Tenhorn. You got luck. You got lots of luck. You should light a candle to your luck. Next time you fill a ditch. This time I only warn you. And these are the warnings on the way. Tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, you go to Union Station. You buy a ticket, east, west, north, or south. You go. You go till the train runs out of the rails. No more room for you in Kansas City. Only in that ditch. You hear me?
I hear you. Jake and Perry drove me back to the Erskine. They dropped me on Baltimore. I sat on the curb, my head between my knees. After a while, I felt a little better. I could breathe again. The lights were still on up in Matty's loft. He was probably working on the master. While I navigated the long flight of stairs, trying hard to hold back the sudden anger kicking up in me. It wasn't Matty's fault. He'd warned me about Zelda. No use to take it out on him. Well, I went into the loft and made an effort to hold it down.
but it was a wasted effort. Matty wouldn't have minded anything I said or did. Matty wasn't even there. Only his body, half covered with a burlap used on the walls to soundproof the joint. He'd been shot once through the head, clawed down enough burlap over himself to make a shroud. I picked up the phone in the office, gave Central the number of Sour Sammy's joint, and waited for Sammy to see if Barney Ricketts was under his favorite table. Barney Ricketts is the only ex-bootlegger I know who went broke in 1922. He set out to prove that a man could drink his gin without ill effects. But he never set a time limit on the experiment. No, Barney hadn't come in yet to Sour Sammy's. Well, I left word for him, meet me at Fat Annie's place. I started to leave. I hesitated and went back to Matty Wynn, spread a clean handkerchief over his face. I made the street three stairs at a time. I crossed the river, jolted the Erskine down Boulder Road to Fat Annie's place. Seemed like a waste of good singing, but Maggie Jackson was getting ready to do her number. I eased a lone drunk out of a booth, draped him on the edge of the bar, and sat and listened to Maggie.
Across the river on the Kansas side, that's where Fat Annie and the blues abide. To get your music and your chicken fried, come to Fat Annie. Just pour a pocketful of rock and ride across the river to the Kansas side. And when you get across that great divide, come to Fat Annie.
I'm just beat, Pete. Right down to my shoes.
Yeah, it's a noisy crowd, Maggie.
Out-of-town wine buyers with gin chasers. Murder.
Yeah, you want a beer?
Thanks, Pete. I could use it.
All right.
Hey, draw two, will you?
Barney ain't been in yet, has he?
No. You got trouble again, Pete?
Where can I buy a new birthday? The stars are ganging up on me.
Ain't nothing in that astrology, Pete.
Well, there must be some explanation. Yes or no, hot or cold, I catch it.
What's the misery this time, Pete?
Only that Matty Wynn caught a bullet in the head.
No.
And if I'm not out of KC by morning, he's going to have company. Look, Maggie, do you remember a disc I cut for Matty? June night?
Sure do. Good session.
You got a copy of that one?
Right on top of the pile.
Where?
In my room, just down the street a piece.
Well, I'd go with you, Maggie, but I don't want to miss Barney.
I'll get it for you, Petey.
Thanks a lot.
Ah, Peach Kelly, noted troubadour, bar of the barrel houses.
Hi, Barney.
And Maggie Jackson, canary of the cribs.
I'll be right back, Pete.
Thanks a lot.
Petey, I've just suffered a great hurt. No sooner did I set foot in Sour Sammy's joint than Sour Sammy himself came a-grinning and a-smirking to tell me with undisguised glee that you were waiting for me here. He was openly delighted to see me go.
Yeah, look, Barney.
I was sorely tempted to ignore the message, merely to aggravate Sour Sammy, you understand. But since it was you, Petey, and in distress, I'll warrant, I came on the wings of Mercury.
Thanks, Barney.
Mercury, that's a thought, Petey. We've tried ether in our beer, chloroform, and even the tincture of laudanum. Now, what would a soup spoon of mercury do? No, too risky, unless, of course, one...
Barney, listen to me, will you? I'm breathing against the clock.
Never will I forget Sour Sammy's attitude, and after all the credit he's given me, too. No, Petey, it proves only one thing. Man is essentially an asocial animal. We band together only because we find it impossible to survive alone.
Yeah, I know.
But there is no true affection anywhere. Like the wolf, yes, take the wolf, Petey. He too herds, but only in times of want and stress.
Yeah.
And as soon as he doesn't have to rely upon his fellow wolf for survival, off he goes to prey upon his own. Yes, Petey, like the wolf, man is a lone hunter, hating the herd because he is forced to depend upon it for survival.
You all through?
Very well, fellow wolf.
Johnny April, Barney, do you know him?
Oh, yes, yes. A fine gentleman, Johnny April. Never kills on the Sabbath.
Well, I can't wait that long. He gives me till morning to get out of town.
foolish man right now. You should be navel deep in timetables.
Look, I got sucked into this by his wife, Zelda. She asked me to get a record from Maddie Wynn that belongs to her. She told April that I'm trying to shake her down. I got worked over and Wynn got a bullet.
What's on this record?
I don't know. It's just a disc I once made for Maddie. It's called June Night.
Why does Zelda want it?
I don't know.
Why did Zelda lie to April?
I don't know.
Here's the record, Pete.
Thanks, Maggie.
And who shot Maddie?
I don't know.
Let's save time, Petey. Just tell me what you do know.
Well, all I know is that Zelda's after this record and she doesn't want April to know it.
And that's the copy there?
Yeah, June Night. I thought maybe we could spin it once and maybe it'll give us some kind of a message.
I'll put it on the phonograph, Pete.
Thanks, Maggie. I'll wind it up for you here. All right, listen to it, huh?
Quality mean anything?
Nothing.
No hidden meanings or codes or ciphers?
Nothing there but the music.
Tell me, Petey, how are these things made?
What?
A recording.
Well, you record directly onto a round table of soapy wax, and then they dust this wax with graphite, and they dip it in a copper plating tank. From this, they make what they call a mother, or the stamper. And that's what turns out the records that you buy in the store.
I see. And the wax master, that's always kept in the recording studio?
Yeah.
When you've finished a job, Pete, can anything else be recorded on the master?
Well, I suppose you could dub from one master to another, yeah.
Petey, when I was a mere lad, my old father told me, when you seek an answer, child, always go to the master.
I pointed Barney for the door. We got into the Erskine and jolted back over Boulder Road and across the river. Barney insisted on expanding his wolf-man-herd theory all the way back to Baltimore Street. By the time we reached Matty Wynn's loft, my fangs were on edge. Barney looked away from Wynn's body as we headed for the file room. I yanked open a metal container. It was empty. The master of June Night was gone. Yeah. Your old father was right, Barney.
He also told me the master will always be there for you. Notice the disarranged state of the files here. All the compartments.
Yeah.
Whoever came for the master of June Night went directly to the right file as you did. Didn't find it there and ransacked the rest of the place.
Well, then Matty hid it, figuring something like this. But where?
Let's look around the control room, Petey.
Oh, there's no place there to hide a flea.
Did you ever read a story called The Purloined Letter by Edgar Allan Poe?
Not now, Barney.
A wonderful little tale.
Now, look, Barney,
particular story, Petey, a number of detectives were taking a room apart by the seams, searching for a letter. They couldn't find it, and why? Because man is blind, Petey. He never recognizes the truth when his eyes fall on it, just as our eyes now fall on this peculiar-looking record on the turntable.
Yeah. Barney, he wouldn't leave it out just like this.
Prove me wrong. Play it.
All right. All right. Let's listen to it and see.
You understand what you'd have said, Elder?
You wrote the script for me.
Not that I don't trust you, of course.
Let's get on with it, Maddie.
A little closer to the microphone, Zelda.
This close enough, Maddie?
This close enough, Pete?
Don't be foolish, Zelda. Put that gun away.
Give me the record, Pete.
Sure, in exchange for that gun.
You'll get what's in the gun.
Like you dealt it to Maddie? The record here on the turntable all the time, and you broke three nails ripping those files apart?
Face the wall. Keep your hands up. Lean against it, both of you.
Excuse me, madam, but I just dropped in to make a record for the folks.
Shut
back
up.
Surely.
One move, and I'll give it to you in the back.
That's my department, Zelda.
Johnny!
Give me the gun. All right, Zelda, I tailed you here. I only bought a small piece of your yarn. Now I want the rest of it.
I didn't want to involve you, Johnny. I came to pay them off. They killed Maddie. See? See there? And I got the gun away
from... No good, Zelda. Can't you see his face? He just run out of mileage and ideas. Listen to this, April.
No. No, darling. It's a frame. This...
Shut up! All right, Kelly, I'm listening, and it better be good.
All right. Here it is. It's all on the record.
Perfect. Now, just in case anything goes wrong, this recording will be our protection from each other. To whom it may concern, my wife, Zelda, and I have entered into this agreement of our own free will.
All right, just get to it, Maddie.
Go ahead.
I have told Johnny April that I want to divorce my husband and marry him. When this is accomplished, it is our intention that I be made a widow as soon as possible and then remarry Maddie Wynn.
Just for the record, you agree to decoy said Mr. April to a predetermined spot where you'll be unarmed and without bodyguards. I agree to shoot Mr. April. The police will not question your story that he was ambushed by a rival mobster, identity unknown to you. You will then inherit the April money and return to me. You agree?
I agree. Crazy enough to do anything for you. Even when you tell your own wife.
All right, that's enough.
This will be legal and...
Johnny... Johnny.
April, don't. Don't shoot her.
Johnny, don't. Don't. Please, don't.
Get away,
no,
Zelda.
No.
Back off so I won't miss you.
Johnny.
Zelda!
Johnny! Johnny!
He can't hear you.
I should have let him kill me.
You fell in love with him, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Only one thing I didn't count on.
Yeah. You can't dance at two weddings with one heart.
Pete Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Joe Eisinger. Music by Dick Cathcart. Scoring by Matty Matlock.
Okay, we concluded this two-month-long study of Jack Webb with Pete Kelly's Blues. That was titled Zelda, with an original air date of the 29th of March, 1951. That's kind of how you would have heard it that summer. At the end of June, Dragnet would go off the air, and then Pete Kelly Blues filled in. And it was actually a pleasant surprise to find Pete Kelly's Blues. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'll come back next week with a couple of different dramas not featuring Jack Webb. Thanks for listening.